How's it going, everyone? Kyle with Dirt Bike Channel here. This is the Dirt Bike Channel podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Pretty excited about today's episode. It's my vindication. It's my redemption podcast. Oh my goodness. So there's this trail. It's in Utah. It's called 5 Miles of Hell. A ton of you guys know about this thing. Probably a ton of you guys have ridden it. And it's an intimidating trail, especially like if you have heard. If you're gonna name a trail 5 Miles of Hell, I mean it's gonna create some emotions in certain people. And it's not a trail that's for the faint of heart. And I tell you that like straight up. Also, I would say that now having done it, little spoiler alert. I personally would not name it 5 Miles of Hell, but I'm 10 years into my dirt biking career. Maybe a little over 10 years into my dirt biking career, and I had an absolute blast on this trail. Just absolutely blast. I will definitely go again, but I got a little history with this trail. So let's rewind the clock here just a little bit. So, and let me set the stage for you, because I know I've got listeners from all over the U.S. So the 5 Miles of Hell Trail is this little area where some crazy, crazy people back in, I don't know, the 70s or 80s decided, hey, we're on top of the San Rafael Swell, which is this major, major geographical feature out here in Utah, unlike anywhere else in the world. And we're going to just then carve out a trail. And carve out a trail is the wrong way to characterize it, because you're not carving anything out. You're just riding across rock. There's some rock that you're going. I mean, it's mostly a trail that's on rock. And then there's some sand. There's no dirt on this trail. On when you're actually on the 5 Miles of Hell Trail, there is no dirt. There's just mostly rock and then sand. So they have the trail kind of painted, not kind of, it is painted on the rock. And in the area, there's also some other trails that are also painted, and they are painted different colors. And so it's all approved. And these are trails that are on maps where, you know, anybody can just go out there and ride these trails. They're approved, and, you know, stay on the trail and tread lightly and pick up your trash and all that stuff. And then we're good. So Here's the history that I have. It's about 3.5 hours away from where I live. I live in northern centralish Utah, a little bit south of Salt Lake City, Utah. So it's out in the middle of nowhere. Like you're not by anything at all when you're out there doing this trail. So you're in the middle of nowhere, 3.5 hours away from where I live, one way. And so it's not something that I've made a super huge priority to go and do, because it's like, oh, this is just kind of a destination thing. And yeah, there are other trails in the area, like, you know, maybe 45 minutes or an hour drive away. and we've done a lot of those trails. And I've been to this 5 Miles of Hell area now at least 4 times, which I'll kind of go through. And so I've got a little history. The first time I went there, I was camping with my family. This is in like 2014. I was camping with my family maybe a half hour away. And I just, you know, we had a fifth wheel trailer, and I just threw my bike in the back of the truck. Didn't even have a ramp because I had like the fifth wheel toy hauler. So I threw the bike in the back of the truck in a ditch. I got the truck down in kind of a ditch and lifted the bike back in the truck. Went down to this trailhead because I'd heard about it. Figured out how to get the bike out of the truck with no ramp. You can see where this is going. And I'm alone, and I go, you have to kind of go down like this little whooped out trail or something for a few miles until you get to the actual 5 Miles of Hell starting point. And you even start, do a little bit of this trail called the Red Trail. And then you get there, and you're now at this T, where if you went right, you'd be on the Red Trail, which is also a technical trail in its own aspect, but it isn't as technical. Or you can go left, and you're on 5 Miles of Hell Trail. It's painted white. It's very well marked the entire way. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to see what this old 5 Miles of Hell Trail is thing. And so I turn left. I start going that way. You're kind of going, well, at first you're going north, but generally speaking, the general consensus or the general direction of that 5 Miles of Hell Trail from that point is east, southeast. Although you start out going north, doesn't matter. Point is, I start going up that, down that, however you want to call it. And I make it not too long until I felt like, oh, this is getting real. And then I realized I have no way to communicate with anyone. You're not in cell phone service. I now carry GPS communicators with me, but at the time I didn't have anything. So I had my cell phone with me, but all it was good for is to take pictures. So no one knows where I'm at. My family doesn't know where I'm at. If I get hurt, if I get stuck in here, they're without transportation. They're in the middle of nowhere with no truck. They've got the trailer, but you know, so I'm like, this is probably not the smartest thing for me to be doing. So I decide to turn around. Funny thing is, I now realized this time I recognized the area where I turned around, and I'm not second guessing my decision to turn around. That was the right decision to turn around. What is funny though is where I turned around, because that was where I thought, oh, this is starting to get real. And I had a chuckle to myself this time when I actually realized that. So that was the first time in 2014. The second time I went there, it was maybe about a year, year and a half later. I went there with a buddy, Sam, and we were camping also in the Santa Fe Swell area in a different place. And we then took one of the plans we had is, hey, let's go ride 5 miles of hell. And so we put the bikes in the back of the truck and we go down and we head over there. Well, that day I woke up and I was just super nauseous. I was a little sick. And so we drive over there hoping that the nausea would go away, because a lot of times I'm nauseous in the morning for whatever reason. We get to the trailhead and I'm nauseous and I'm just getting worse. And so I decide, hey, I don't want to go down this, 5 miles of hell trail that day. With the way I'm feeling, I kind of felt sick, like almost flu-like. And so we went down and we did the red trail. And we did the red trail, the blue trail, the green trail, the orange trail, did like all these other color trails. We got caught in a rainstorm. Now, it was a good day. I gutted through it, but didn't do 5 miles of hell that day. So then fast forward to, and then just a million things have happened and it just wasn't super high on my priority list. So then a million things happened. And in the late 2019, decide that I'm going to go there. I've got Tyler with me. I got Sam with me. We're going to go down and we're going to do 5 miles of hell. We're going to go out and back and it's going to be awesome. That was the plan. Well, I get going down there and I've already done a podcast on this. And a lot of you guys know that we got right to the crux, which is maybe a third of the way in or whatever. And I think it's the most challenging, the most intimidating obstacle on the entire thing. We get right there. I watch my buddies, attempt this thing while I'm trying to film them. And then I go to start my bike and it won't start. Oh my gosh, it won't start. And it's not because it doesn't have a kickstart. It's not because of the battery. We can't figure it out. We're swapping ECUs. We're swapping fuel tanks. We're swapping, like, I looked at all my fuses and then spoiler alert, you can go back and listen to the other podcast on this. Where I say I'm stranded in 5 miles of hell. But what happened was one of the fuses was blown. The fuse to the fuel pump blew, but I couldn't tell that it was blown. I had the fuses in my hand because they give you extra fuses right in the bike. Right there in that fuse block, there are two spare fuses. Either one of those would have started the bike. But so I learned that, hey, you can't just look at your fuses and tell if they're broke or if they're blown. You're going to, if you have a test light, you can use a test light, or you can just swap the spare fuses and put those in and the bike would have started. Long story short, we spent the rest of the day dragging that bike out of there, which was an experience all in itself. I'll tell you what, it's one thing to drag a bike down a dirt road. It's another thing to drag a bike at 5 miles of hell. Even on the escape routes, we were about half of a mile away from an escape route when it broke. When that happened, but we had to drag it up the crux and up the hill. And then even the escape route is a horrible place to tow a motorcycle. Anyway, we get it back to the truck and we hadn't had our riding fill. So then I get my backup bike, which was a 250 XE. And we go back down out there. We go down the red trail and back, and then it's getting dark. And that was the end of that day. So that's the third time. So now fourth time of the charm is the charm. All we had COVID for 2020, just a lot of things happened. So we didn't get out. So now me and Tyler and this time Garrett decide, hey, for Kyle, fourth time is the charm. See, Garrett and Tyler had done this trail multiple times, at least twice, three times, the whole thing. I just hadn't ever done the whole thing. And so I'm like, hey, we got to get out there. I got to do this trail. It's just been something I've got to tick off my list. So take the 2021 KTM 300 XCW down there on the fourth time. Little bit of advice, go when the weather isn't too hot. I would recommend, here we are in April. anytime after April, you probably don't want to do it unless there's kind of a cold spell. I think the perfect temperature, the perfect high temperature for going and doing that is somewhere around 50, maybe 60 tops. You don't want to be doing it if it's hotter than that. I mean, do whatever you want, but you don't want to be caught out there because a lot of guys are going to be overheating. A lot of guys are going to be struggling. You can only carry so much water, you know, and so don't go on a day when it's super hot. Wait until October, November, or, you know, a cooler day in September or something like that. But don't go if it's 80 degrees. Don't go if it's 90 degrees unless you're an experienced rider and you know the trail and you know you can do it. And anyway, if you're that guy, then you don't need to worry about my suggestions because you already know. Anyway, don't go when it's too hot. So this time, I wasn't planning on taking a drone, but then I had ridden so little in 2021 so far because of the weather and my schedule and everything that I was like, I kind of do now want to take the Skydio 2 drone and it can follow me. And so I took the Skydio 2. I don't like taking that drone with me because I have to take a certain pack. The Skydio doesn't break down that much and I have to take like probably my least favorite riding pack of all. I have to take that pack in order to use the Skydio. One second, let me get a drink here. I have to take this big pack I don't like in order to do that, to take that drone. But I'm like, you know what? I just had a feeling I should take it and try to get the majority of the 5 miles of Hell Trail. I only took 3 batteries and I got the majority of it. If I took 4 batteries, if I took 5, I could get the entire trail. And I think I could get the entire trail. In fact, I could get the entire trail with 4 because you can get about 15, 16 minutes of flight time with that. And I think if I just push through it, I could do it in about an hour. But that's just going all out, you know. I haven't done it for time. I'm just saying like I did about 45 minutes of drone footage off 3 batteries and I have most of it. So if I had 1 hour of drone footage, drone battery, I think I could get the entire trail based off of what I saw. Maybe 4.5 batteries. Anyway, point is, I shot a bunch of drone footage, and then I've been putting out these videos kind of spliced together where I'm using the audio off my point of view camera, off my helmet, and then I'm using splicing in and putting kind of the audio and the video of that helmet cam superimposed over the top of that is the drone footage, which is pretty cool. I haven't seen anybody else doing drone footage and footage like that, especially not at 5 miles of Hell. Although I hardly watch any dirt bike related content on YouTube. It takes like several people sending me a video before I actually, if it's one of my buddies who I know and trust and they send me a dirt bike video, I'll watch it. Cause they're usually like, hey, you need to watch this or whatever, because of this thing. I'm making so much dirt bike content. I try not to watch it on YouTube. Anyway, but I think it's cool. I think the drone footage that I've got, I'm going to do probably 4 parts on that thing. And so it's fun. Wasn't going for any crazy fast times. I just wanted to take it all in. Again, I'm at the worst riding shape of my year. That's kind of what happens in the early spring. You know, January, February, March is where I'm riding the least. And so I'm in the worst shape that I will be in all year long. I'm still in pretty good cardio shape because I do my skier here at the house. I do my rower here at the house. But there's a difference between your cardio shape and your dirt bike riding shape. Like the muscles in your low back, the muscles in your arms and your shoulders, you can't replicate that unless you're on the bike. So, you know, and everyone thinks like, oh, Kyle, you're out of shape because listen to you huffing and puffing. And I say to those people, hey, you try putting a lavalier mic 1 inch from your mouth and let's see how you sound. So yeah, obviously I could be in better shape, but I'm in decent shape. I'm 39 years old. I'm turning 40 this year. But as far as the way I look and the way I feel, I'm in as good a shape as I've ever been in. You know, so it's kind of like, you can ask my wife. Don't ask my wife, but you could ask my wife. I'm not in horrible shape. But you put a microphone 1 inch from your mouth when you're wrestling a 250-pound dirt bike. And then the other thing, too, is this trail, you don't hear a lot of the motor. Like, a lot of times, there's wind noise that covers my voice or my breathing. There's bike noise that covers my breathing. But here, you're doing super low RPMs for most of it. The bike is just barely over idle for a lot of it, you know? as soon as your speeds click up, then I click up to second gear to keep the second or third gear to keep the RPMs down low. Anyway, the point is you hear a lot of breathing. But I just wanted to take it all in. And so we get down now, we get to kryptonite, which is this, I only know two names for these obstacles. There's kryptonite, which is right before the crux. It's a nasty obstacle. And I get there, and the other time that I was there, I looked out, I'm like, oh, that's nasty and whatever. And I'm on the 2019, and I think I see the line that I want to go up this thing. And I just don't take enough. I don't have enough momentum, and my back, it's off camber, and my back tire falls down, and you know the bike is upside down. And I even say right then, because I went back and like I dug up the footage. I even say right then, I think I could do that. Vindication. I get here. I'm looking at the obstacle. My heart is beating out of my chest because I'm like, hey, I said, I remembered, like, I think I could do that. But you see it, and you're like, dang, that thing is nasty. You've got to really, really be into it. You got to commit. And I committed, and I took a little bit more momentum into it than I thought I needed. And guess what? Boom, popped right up and out of that obstacle kryptonite. And I'm like, oh, that was sweet. That was sweet. That is one of those moments. It's a super, super rewarding moment where I made a section that totally owned me and bested me the time previous. Those are, and you've had them in your writing. Think about it. Those are the times where you get this really, really rewarding feeling. It's this sense of accomplishment. It's like, wow. You can just kind of see the progression. Sometimes it's huge, sometimes it's small. But in this case, it was like, holy crap. That was really, really sweet. I was able to do that. So Tyler's behind me and he's like, hey, did you hook it? I'm like, no, I just kind of went up it. I mean, I did hook it a little bit, but I went right up the line. And then he goes up and he kind of does the exact same thing that I had done the year before. Bike slides out, you know, the rear tire slides out, but then he tips and the bike actually tumbles on top of him, pins him between a tree and a rock. And me and Garrett run down there and we, you know, lift the bike up and he gets out and, you know, it's intense. And then we get to the crux, and now we're at the crux, and the pressure is on, and I'm starting to feel all the pressure, because number one, would the bike even start? I mean, Tyler was giving me a bunch of crap. He's like, "Hey, if we get to the crux and your bike doesn't start, I say you never come here again," you know, because he knew all the history, and so the question was, would Kyle's bike start? Well, we get there to the crux, and then I break out the drone, and I get the cameras out, and I do some things because I wanted to get some footage of us doing this. And so I watched Tyler and Garrett try to nail this thing. And people have stacked all these rocks as you kind of lead up to this major obstacle because there's several step-ups. It isn't helping, guys. We sat there, and we threw like 20 rocks out of the way because people are stacking up all these smaller rocks to try to make the path smoother up to the main obstacle, which there's nothing you can do about the main obstacle. And it makes it harder, guys. You should just leave the trail the way it is because even if you're doing these little step-ups on the way, as long as the step-ups don't blow out from under you, it's fine. I'd rather be hitting off-camber step-ups going up to this thing than to have all these stupid rocks that are bouncing and, you know. Anyway, point is, every once in a while, it's okay to put a rock as like to help you with the transition to something, but don't put 40 rocks. I don't know. Every situation is different, but that one, I'm like, this is not helping, guys. So we tossed a bunch of rocks out of the way because they're just going to like deflect you anyway. And then we did it. So I'm a little bit nervous. I've seen Garrett and Tyler try it. I've seen them, you know, fail a couple times, do it kind of clean a couple times, you know, and these guys have done this obstacle now 20 times at least because of the different times that they had been there. I've done it 0 times. I haven't even tried it yet. And also I put this extra pressure on me because I had seen many people like make it. I'd seen some people that probably didn't have any business making it. Make it up, you know, where you just like send it on a 450 with a recluse or something and just like buck and bronco up the thing, which I've done on certain obstacles where it's like I have no business making it, but I make it anyway out of sheer luck and sheer will and sheer momentum. So in my mind, I'm making all this extra pressure for myself because I'm like, hey, you got to do it. Can you do it? Are you going to fall off of it? Are you going to make a big fool of yourself? All these things are going through your mind. And so I get the drone flying up. I start my camera. My heart's beating out of my chest. And I'm like, okay, here we go. And I go rocking it up to the thing. And I'm carrying more momentum than I think I need. And it works out well. Boom. I make it up really quite cleanly. The very, very last tippy top of the thing, I've got my front tire over it, but I'm starting to tip the other way. So I just, drop it down. I thought, hey, that's a good run. I'm up, I'm there. I got it 97% of the way, and 90 on an obstacle like this, hey, anything over 80% is a success for sure. So I get up there, kind of then shoot some more drone footage, and Tyler and Garrett are continuing to try it. So a lot of times when I'm out on these rides, I feel like, hey, look, I'm on the clock. I'm working. I got to get some footage. I got to document this. And so I ended up just doing it that one time and then getting a bunch of footage from the guys. Let me get a drink here. I woke up this morning and I've just had a headache and it's just been brewing. If I'd have known that, I would have taken some Excedrin before coming down here and doing this. So I'm going to just kind of drink a little bit through this, drink some water. That's what I've got right here. Anyway, so it was good. Got a good run at the Crux. The bike started. And I'm like, hey, everything from here on out is gravy because I got the Kryptonite obstacle that bested me before. I got up the Crux as good as I, on my first run up it, I got up it as good as I could possibly really ever hope for. And I'm like, this is a good day. It's a good day. My bike is still running. So moving on from there, everything now is new to me. I haven't seen anything after this point once we get up there. In fact, once we get up a quarter mile or half mile past the Crux, after that bailout trail that Tyler had drugged me on, now every single thing is new. And I'm feeling really good because it's just amazing. And the thing, I was just kind of stunned by the rugged beauty of this trail. See, here's the thing. I feel like the other times that I was there, I was intimidated enough by the trail and the ruggedness of it that I wasn't seeing the beauty of the area. And this time, I was seeing the beauty of the area, seeing how rugged it is and just all these vibrant colors, lots of reds and oranges and tans and lighter colors, just whites mixed throughout this ribbon of rock, and it is just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. I could not believe the rugged beauty of that trail. It's just kind of stunning. And it got me also thinking as I rode out and back about what that would have been like as those first few people that were kind of making that route. I think they were doing it in the 70s. I could be wrong on that, but it might even be earlier in the 60s, certainly no later than the 80s. And if you think about the bikes, especially the trail bikes that they would have had access to, and you think about the suspension components, go back and look at a 1970s motorcycle, a dirt bike, and think about, I mean, it's one thing to do it on these modern bikes with this, amazing amount of suspension and these low lugging two stroke motors, or maybe a four stroke motor with a recluse where it can't stall. All these modern components. And then think about doing this trail, creating this trail. How much of a screw loose, if you've been on this trail, how many screws have to be loose? And how many turns out from snug do they have to be for you to go out and make a trail like this? I ask you that question because I think you've got to have multiple screws loose. Now, I'm glad that we have people like that that did it, but it must have been crazy back then doing it in that time. And if you're one of the guys listening to this or you know some of the people that did this, send me an email, kyle@dirtbikechannel.com. I'd love to hear about it. I bump into gentlemen, I should say, here along the Wasatch Front from time to time that cut in all these dirt bike trails that we're riding in the mountains, and they cut in way more that we've been kicked off of now. Now they're just hiking only trails, or they're mountain biking only plus hiking trails. Like, it's not a motorized trail. All those trails were cut in by freaking motorcyclists in the 50s. I don't know about 50s, but in the 60s and 70s, because they've told me. I've been sitting there on the side of a trail with a 70-year-old man or an 80-year-old man, and him telling me, yeah, we made these trails. Me and my group made these trails, and now we're kicked off of them. In some cases, we're not kicked off of them. But the point is, super, super awesome guys. And it makes me wonder what it would have been like, you know, back in the 70s. So we push through. I spend, you know, two more drone batteries after the crux. I spent one drone battery getting to the crux and shooting at the crux. And then I shot two more drone batteries after that. And that was all the batteries that I brought. I bought three batteries. I mean, you have to decide how much weight you're going to bring, you know. And so we get down to the end of the trail, and I was just overwhelmed with gratitude. I was like, dang, that trail was way much, much more fun than I thought it was going to be. It was much more beautiful than I thought it was going to be. And the first thing that pops out of my mouth once I drop kind of out to the end, you kind of are out in this, it's not a staging area, but you're out in this little area where it's like, okay, done. They even have like a log book to sign, like, hey, we're done. We're, you know, you did 5 miles of hell. You can sign. I didn't sign the log, but I think they have a log book. We didn't spend enough time. Anyway, point is, you're at the end of it. And the first thing out of my mouth on the bike is, I'm like, that is not the hardest trail in Utah. There's a lot of people that say, hey, this is the hardest trail in the US. This is the hardest trail in Utah. Here's what I will say. It might be the hardest trail that you'll find published on a map. You guys know what I'm talking about. There are trails that are not published. People are always pushing the limits and like, hey, we're going to go up this canyon, then down this canyon, then up this other canyon, and you string it all together. In Utah, out in the desert, in northern Arizona, out in the desert, Idaho in the desert, I'm sure. I haven't ridden Idaho desert stuff, but the point is, guys make trails and guys do trails that are not on maps. Not admitting that I've ever been on any of those things, but you know that they're there. And I'm just telling you, 5 miles of hell is not the hardest trail in Utah. But it might be the hardest trail that you can find easily on a map. And I would say it's amazing. It's awesome. The people who wouldn't like that trail is if you're shorter and, you know, you can't post a foot. If you don't like going slow, don't go there. If you don't like, you know, hard enduro technical riding, don't go there. I have friends that hate it. And that's one of the reasons why I wasn't like motivated to go there, is because I had some friends who I trust were like, dude, don't go there. It sucks. All you're going to do is beat your bike up. Well, so that, I didn't have a lot of motivating to go there. I did have other people telling me, hey, go there. But the first people who were telling me were like, no, don't go there. It sucks. I've done it. No need to go there. I'm telling you, if you're just a fast dirt bike rider, then yeah, you probably don't need to go there. If you like the slower, if you like the technical, yeah, go there. Go do the red trail first. So you'll see what I mean. If you download some maps, you can go to, like, you know, dirtbikeutah.com. This is where I send almost everyone who emails me. Go to dirtbikeutah.com and you can find almost every single trail in the state. I haven't even ridden all the stuff on dirtbikeutah.com. I shouldn't say that. It's dirtbikeutah.net. That's what it is. Dirtbikeutah.net is a place to go. They have GPX tracks. They have maps. I'm looking at their map right now. They've got a PDF that you can download that shows you 5 miles of hell and the escape route and the red trail, the green trail, the blue trail, the orange trail. So your first time down there, probably the best thing to do is go park at the parking lot where it says red trail, and you go down that. It's whooped out, you know, kind of trail for a few miles. And then you actually get onto the red trail where it's red paint on the rocks. Do the red trail out and back. That will give you a really good indication of what you're going to find in the 5 miles of hell trail. It's just the obstacles are going to be bigger, closer together, and more of them. So I loved it. We got out there and I'm like, dang, this is fun. This was fun. We ate some snacks, drank some water, rested for maybe 20 minutes or whatever. And maybe 25 minutes, and maybe a half hour. I don't know. We were just enjoying ourselves. And then we went right back up the gut, you know, and you don't have to do that. Like, many riders would take the Lone Man Trail back. The Lone Man Trail kind of like shadows. It goes, kind of takes you out and around. It's long. I've actually never been on. I've been on a part of it when we had to tow my bike back. So I haven't seen most of the Lone Man Trail, but from what I understand, it's not the most interesting thing. It's not the most fun thing to do. But hey, most of the people, by the time they get out, they're going to do that. When you're going out, generally, you're going east to southeast. If you're going back, you're going the opposite direction. Most people probably will take the Lone Man Trail back. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to go right back up the gut to get the full treatment. I highly recommend doing it this way. If you spend time, if you get there at the trailhead in the morning, you go out, take your time going out, take a few rests along the way, take a good rest at the very end of it, and then go right back up it. Don't push yourself. That's, you know, you don't want to get hurt. Make sure that you have a way to have a GPS communicator. Like I have the Garmin inReach, and now I'm actually trying something new that one of my new friends pointed out to me. It's the Zoleo. It's a global satellite communicator. I'm testing that thing. It's a couple $100, and then you have a subscription service that you pay $20-$30, depending on which one you go with, to be able to have, you know, GPS text messages two-way. It syncs up with your phone. I'm using that. Anyway, I highly recommend it, seeing it both ways. It's pretty crazy because as you go back, there's a couple of really obvious areas that you recognize, like, oh yeah, I know where I am. I recognize this part, you know, maybe the crux and some different ones. But for the most part, the trail is totally different going the opposite way. And because I had only seen, especially the latter two thirds of the trail on the way out, I had never seen it before. So on the way back, even though it was fresh on my mind, it looks different enough on the way back that it was seemed like it was totally different trail. You know, so as you're going out from the main trailhead, you're going east, southeast, generally speaking. There are some times where you're going north and whatever, but you're going east, southeast on the way out. And then on the way back, you're going west, northwest. It does seem easier overall when you're going back, like the whole west-northwest direction. I believe that is easier. But since I was out of riding shape and I was gassed by that time, it presented multiple challenges. One of these times, I think what we'll do is we'll go try to do it the opposite direction or something. I'll have to figure that out. Like do the loop the opposite way and see if I still think what I just said is true. Because I do think that whole east-southeast general direction is harder than going back up it. But I mean, I don't know. It's funny because I'm saying going back, I feel like it was easier a little bit just because of the way that the obstacles are laid out. But because I'd spent so much energy on the way out and I'm out of riding shape, it presented some unique challenges. And I hit kind of a physical wall, like my arms, my legs, my back hit kind of a physical wall about 3/4 of the way back up the trail. And then my form and technique kind of went out the window, and I was sitting down on multiple obstacles, just like, you know, cutting it out. So I want to go back and do this again in the fall when I'm, you know, in better riding shape. And then just do the exact same thing again and just kind of see how it goes and see if I hit that wall. I don't think I will. I think if I'm in better riding shape, A, I won't take the drone with me, so I won't be packing that awkward big pack with a bunch of extra weight that isn't helpful. I mean, I take a lot of water and I take a lot of tools and stuff, but the other pack that I have is just a better pack to ride with. So I will take that other pack and see how it goes when I'm in better shape. So that's kind of what my plan is to do that in the fall. You know, whether it's this fall or next fall, I don't know, but I want to go back and do it in the fall and just see if I can tell the difference, because I think I'll be able to do it easier. So I was vindicated. I was finally, fourth time is the charm. I was finally able to get out there and get that sucker down. Hey, if you want to support Dirt Bike Channel for the YouTube channel and for the podcast, one of the best ways that you can do it is use my links for Rocky Mountain ATV, Amazon Motorsport. I don't have sponsors for this. Maybe one day I will. I haven't done that yet. So a couple ways you can support. Obviously, use the links for Rocky Mountain ATV. I have them over on my website, dirtbikechannel.com. You can click on those Usually the links are also in the descriptions of the YouTube videos, but it's really easy to go to dirtbikechannel.com. If you've emailed me, thank you so much. In fact, if you want to suggest topics for the podcast, I'm going to be getting on several more guests here in the near future where we're just going to be talking dirt bike stories and everything. But if you have ideas for podcasts or ideas for videos on YouTube, you can email me, kyle@dirtbikechannel.com. That is the best way to get a hold of me. I don't really check social media messages, Instagram, Facebook. I'm just, it's too much of that. So I can't do that. But email me and I will I'll hit you back. Also, every once in a while, we do a Dirt Bike Channel sweepstakes where I give motorcycles away from you. Essentially, what this is the bikes that I ride and review, then I offer them up as prizes. So at those times, you can go to my website, dirtbikechannel.com, get yourself some gear, a shirt, a hat, a hoodie, you know, a power valve cover for your KTM, brake reservoir covers for any of your Brembo bikes, Brembo equipped bikes. You can buy stuff like that. A bunch of stuff over there, tie downs, everything. Though, if you're doing it during one of the sweepstakes, which it's always obvious when I have a sweepstakes going on because it's all over my website, then it gets you entries in to win those bikes. So, and that's a great way to support Dirt Bike Channel as well. I will have one of those coming up on April 30th of this year in 2021 and going through June 30th of 2021. Okay, so that's what I've got for you guys. Hopefully everyone is having a wonderful, wonderful day. Maybe some of you are on spring break. I love it. Leave a single track, everybody. Thanks.